It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Welcome to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, presented by our great friends, Exterior Home Solutions. They've been local and trusted since 1999 for siding, windows, roofing, garage, whatever the case may be. Contact Exterior Home Solutions today if you have a need, 865-524-5888, or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. We are very thankful for our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions here on this Thanksgiving holiday. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Hope you guys are enjoying the day. Maybe on the way to grandmother's house right now. Getting done with lunch or dinner and listen to the VolQuest podcast. We appreciate you guys and got a lot of questions to get into, so we'll jump right down into it. We'll start with Kay Hensley, 1062 against Alabama. The Vols did a great job keeping Jalen Milroe in the pocket and forcing him to throw. Are there any elements of the game plan that can help them against Pavia, or is that offense too drastically different?
I think it's pretty drastically different, Hubber. You know, just from a standpoint, like Milroe dropped back and he wanted to throw the deep ball or he wanted to run around. Pavia, you've talked about the ball handling all week, and that's just something where, like, you know, if Tennessee's not, you know, paying attention, you know, they could easily give up a 40 or 50 yard quick run or whatever to whoever.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think it's different, but the one common thing is, particularly on the defensive ends, you can't get too far upfield. You know, you can't give gaps and holes. I mean, your eyes have to be good, but it is different. This is much more design quarterback run. I mean, Jason Jenkins said this on Monday. Well, he was talking about the option, but I think you can throw this part into it. They haven't played a lot of design quarterback run teams. I mean, the green kid at Arkansas was willing to run around, but they weren't running a lot of design runs for him. This is different in the fact that, you know, this guy, I mean, Pavia is the leading rusher in carries. That's not all scrambles. There's a lot of design runs in there, and that's something Tennessee has not faced a whole lot of this year.
Yeah, again, 825 yards gained on the season. I mean, there's definitely some design runs in there. A bit banged up, but obviously he's going to play, and it'll be up to Tennessee to see how effective he is. One other one here from Kay Hensley. Are there players at UNC that Tennessee was in on that might hit the transfer portal now because of Mack Brown's firing? Any names that Tennessee was in on that elected North Carolina that maybe to keep an eye on, Austin?
I'm sure that there's a player or two at North Carolina that Tennessee would have some interest in, you know, now that, you know, all those kids are going to have 30 days and really basically 12 days before the portal opens up officially for everybody to, you know, kind of look around and, you know, you look again, what do they have on the offensive line that Tennessee might want? What do they have, you know, at receiver that Tennessee might want? What do they have on the defensive line that Tennessee might want? All those are positions I think Tennessee will definitely target, and we'll see what else, kind of manufactures itself. And I think a lot of it will depend on who else Tennessee loses. Who does Tennessee lose that they feel like they may need to go replace? So I think that's kind of where we're at.
AP, just
no names.
Yeah, I started. So just a quick scan. I mean, I don't remember a bunch of guys the last couple of years that Tennessee was head-to-head with North Carolina for. Like they were the two finalists. There's not some Isaiah Campbells where you look at their roster and go, oh, yeah, I remember him. It was – you know, it was either Tennessee or North Carolina for him, so Tennessee would make a lot of sense there.
Hobbs was Carolina, Georgia, right?
It was Georgia. I don't remember if it was Carolina or not, honestly.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm talking about kids that went to North Carolina, where you look at their roster and you go, oh, okay, Tennessee finished second there, you know, or Tennessee was dead in the hunt with those. I don't think there's been a lot of head-to-head battles like that.
We'll move on to UT Vol Fan 29. Who makes the decisions on what crews officiating these games during the college football playoffs? It's not just an SEC thing. It's the college football playoff thing. So, Brent, to your best of your knowledge, who determines the officiating crews?
I mean, I'm assuming it's the people running the college football playoff, but I don't know who that is. That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that.
And it'll be like – I do think it's the CFP, and it'll be something where, like, if you've got a Big Ten and an SEC team playing, it's going to be a Big 12 or ACC crew.
Right.
Just like they do in high school when you get to the playoffs. Like, the Knoxville Association's not calling a game with the Knoxville team.
Or bowl games, yeah.
Right, and like they do in bowl games. So, I mean, you're not going to see an SEC crew ref SEC teams, I don't think, in a college football playoff because there's enough people around the country. So it'll be different. It'll be different news, but whoever with the CFP is in charge of that will dictate who that is. That's something done through the playoff system.
Paydirt 98, when Edmund Spillman cleared to play, with Evan Spillman cleared to play on Saturday against Vanderbilt, can we expect him to get some run at linebacker, or has he been out too long and will only play special teams? I really think his speed sideline to sideline could be a difference maker at linebacker, if not against Vandy, then potentially a playoff game.
I you're not going to see him play just a ton of reps at linebacker, in my opinion. Now, could he, you know, spot a few plays? Yeah, maybe. But I think that the biggest thing is you've added some depth here. We'll see where things go. But, I mean, like, we're in a, you know, winner-take-all type game here for Tennessee. I don't think you're, you know, throwing a true freshman out there who hasn't played in a month and a half and going, yeah, just go do it for
us. Yeah. Well, and prior to that month and a half, prior to the injury, he had played, what, dozen snaps, 20 yeah. snaps, something like that. I mean, it's not like he was in the regular rotation as being a true factor there. Now, I think he's got unlimited potential, but, man, that's a tough ask to say, hey, you haven't played football in a month and a half. Come back for this one. Be in great shape. You know, have great eye discipline. Know where to be all the time. I mean, I think that's hard. So maybe special teams if he plays at all.
Yeah, I agree completely with all that. I do remember at Oklahoma, and Oklahoma was towards the beginning of the season, the fourth game of the year. You know, he had missed, you know, the NC State game, Kent State game maybe, or, the, you know, whatever combination it was. And you look down there, and he's down there in a goal line package like, well, there's 13 down there. I hadn't seen him all year long. So I think they want to play him, obviously, but he's just missed so much time. I think if he plays, it wouldn't be a whole lot for sure. Greg One Vol says, I know it's early, but this has potential to be the most complete team Rick Barnes has ever had. He has it dialed in from high school recruiting, portal, locker room culture. With that being said, at 70 years old, how much longer do you think he wants to coach? Brent, I know that, you know, Grant and Rob both have made comments in the offseason that Rick Barnes enjoys the process of kind of rebuilding a roster. He probably doesn't like a lot of what's going on in college athletics, but I think he enjoys assembling a roster and all that. Obviously, the passion's still there. I don't think anybody can answer that but Rick Barnes, but at 70 years old, it is a question worth asking.
Well, Rick Barnes has always told me this. It's advice he got from Dean Smith, and that is you never retire, you never make a decision about your future at the end of the season, whether or not you're going to continue in the profession or not. Because you're tired and you're immediately thinking, I'm done, I've had enough. When you make that decision is when you get to the preseason and you don't want to get up and go to work. You don't want to go to the gym. And Rick Barnes has not approached that world where he doesn't want to get up and go to the gym. So how long does he go? I don't know. But do I think Rick Barnes is going to shut it down at the end of a season? Doesn't feel like it. I think this is going to be one of those deals where, you know, maybe in the summertime because there's so much gym time, but there's going to be a point in time where he says, you know what, I don't want to get up and do this anymore, and that's when he'll make a decision. Remember, Dean Smith retired weeks before the start of the season, and I think a lot of coaches feel that way and try to follow Dean Smith's advice.
Yeah, you had Tony Bennett that did the same thing this year.
Like, yeah, now right. Part of that I think was about the state of the game more than it was anything else, but I mean – again, if you don't want to get up and go to work, that's when you know you're done. But it's hard to say that a week after getting ousted from the NCAA tournament, you know, because it's been such a long grind. You're exhausted. So where are you? I think he'll be very patient in making that decision. He will very much think the process all the way through. It will not be a spur-of-the-moment emotional type decision for Rick Barnes.
Everett Vol 96 wants to know, what makes Heupel different behind the scenes that has made him so successful in changing the culture and the program compared to previous head coaches Tennessee's had in the last couple of decades, decade plus?
I think it's just his ability to just be a normal guy. You know, I mean, I don't, you know, kids can walk into his office at any time. He knows how to talk to them. He can play the dad role. He can play the big brother role. He can play the uncle role. He's just, you're, you know, everyday normal person. Like, I mean, I don't think Josh thinks of himself as a guy that makes $9 million, even though he does. I don't think Josh thinks of himself as someone who, you know, has it all figured out. I think Josh is just human.
Yeah. And I think it's sometimes also easier when your personality is largely different than the guy that you replaced. And I think that, you know, the relationships, and I'm not saying that Jeremy Pruitt didn't have a relationship with guys on his team, but I don't know. It was a different type of relationship and a different type of going about things. So sometimes that helps a little bit. I think he has been a great calming influence for a lot of guys through the storm. And I think guys have resonated with that in the way he's gone about it, you know, gone about his business. And I think Austin detailed it really well in terms of just how his personality fits. Remember, too, he's not that far removed from playing. So he still and he was a high profile player at a high profile school. So he's got some relatability to where guys are, more so than some of the previous, you know, previous coaches have, because he was in the throes of a Heisman race. He won a national title. He was the face of a program in a rebuilding process.
He played the quarterback position, which
is I think all those things probably helps him relate a little bit to guys in some of those things that they're dealing with.
W.H. Vall says, wants to know, how many signees will Tennessee have on early signing day? A lot's happening here in the days leading up to National Signing Day. Right now, of course, Tennessee has a committed class of 25. All eyes are watching some very high-profile prospects right now. But, Austin, how many guys do you think sign with Tennessee, at least who aren't going to wait until that next period?
I don't think anybody's waiting until the next period. Everybody's going to sign.
Better phrasing, I guess, of the class, who all showing up at mid-year?
Oh, there's 20, at least 20 that are going to be here. It's going to be a huge, huge deal. And it gets more and more every year. The exception is the kids that don't show up until summertime. Rule at this point, it used to be the opposite. If you had two or three Hubbard, it was like, whoa, who is this kid?
I remember they had four one year and it was like, holy smokes, they got four guys in January. And now it's like, you only got four guys in January? Like, what are y'all doing? Like,
what are you doing by not being here in January?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you have a rare occasion where a kid maybe wants to play or wants to run track or, you know, wants to finish his basketball season. Like, I think Hobbs did that, right? AP.
Well, no, he was still here in January. He just played basketball in November and December, happens. No one plays like a few games and then just says, I'm out.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, every now and then you have a kid who wants to stay. And I think Dylan Sampson wanted to run track. And there were some number things in there as well. So, but in the day and age of block scheduling in high school, I mean, everybody should be out at midterm that wants to be out at midterm. It shouldn't be hard to get out at midterm. And it's not. That's why you're seeing so many kids around the country doing this.
Yep.
All right, we'll go to Crayon. He's got a couple ones that he wants to ask. Rank
this crayon? Is it orange?
Magenta.
This is the most important question we'll be asked today. All right, rank these Thanksgiving sides. All right, stuffing, dressing, mashed potatoes, green bean casserole, cranberry sauce. Now there should be a homemade or canned. I think we should need to know which one there. And then sweet potatoes / yams.
I'm out on this whole conversation.
Hold on. I know you well enough. I know you're picking everything, but you don't like mashed potatoes?
Well, yeah, that's number one for me, and the rest of it's just meh.
I mean, here's the thing. I like a lot of food. I mean, you've seen me, guys. I'll try a lot of things. I'm good with mashed potatoes, and I'm out on the rest. I'm done.
I'm good with mashed potatoes. I'm good with stuffing, dressing, you know, turkey and dressing. I'm probably about out on the rest. I love green beans. Don't like green bean casserole. Don't like cranberry. Don't like sweet potatoes. I don't think I've ever had a yam in my life. So yeah, I'm out on. Now give me a little corn casserole in there. Okay, give me a little broccoli casserole in there. Okay, you know.
Give me some mashed potatoes, and they don't even have to be real potatoes. I'll take some of those flakes that you put in boiling water. Tastes like some Kentucky Fried Chicken mashed potatoes. I'm good to go right there.
Now you never do that over the Hubs household, right? I mean,
I do.
He's boiling potatoes. He's boiling, smashing them up.
No.
Oh, yes, you are. You get that grinder.
Everybody,
thing.
I'm not. Everybody on this farm wants real mashed potatoes. I'm totally good with a pack of flakes. I'm totally good with it.
Rank these pies, okay? Pecan.
AP's out.
Pumpkin, apple, chocolate, or other?
A chocolate, apple, and then everything else, blah.
I'll go apple, pecan, other than chocolate.
Stop that, Hubs.
I will go other, which is Hershey bar pie, which is amazing.
Are you a meringue apple guy?
Wait a minute. Hershey bar pie is like a chocolate pie. You can't, I mean, it's chocolate.
It is. But like, so my mom makes a Hershey bar pie, but then she'll make a chocolate pie. And like the chocolate pie is so freaking rich, and I don't like it as much, but the Hershey bar pie's got a little bit more stuff in it. But yeah, you're right, it's similar. Apple's number two, and then the rest for me. I don't like pumpkin pie, I never really have.
Are you a big meringue guy, Hubs, or you just thought it?
I like a good lemon meringue pie. I do not like chocolate pie with meringue on it. I'm not a fan of that. I like a good key lime pie that doesn't really fit with Thanksgiving, but I'm
I like a good peanut butter pie.
Peanut butter pie for those who like peanut butter. I don't do peanut butter, but those who like peanut butter. I'm allergic to peanut butter. I can't do peanut butter. But I'm not allergic to peanuts, and I'm not allergic to butter. Go figure that one out.
What?
Let's move on.
Hubs, have you ever had turducken for Thanksgiving?
I have not. I have not.
AP?
Again, why are you asking me these food questions? This is not my repertoire.
I mean, branch out. I've never had it either, but I've always been intrigued. All right, we'll get back to the other stuff. I like that question. He also asked me about meatballs every single week, and I never bring the question on the show because it's kind of a running joke now. Athron wants to know, most important game in Tennessee history since Georgia 2 weeks ago, right, Brent? Because that's when Tennessee was playing to go to Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this one feels different, though, because you're the favorite. I mean, you weren't the favorite to go to Georgia to win. And even in 22, like, that was a monumental challenge to go to Georgia and win that. This one,
they were so good that year, yeah.
I mean, this is different because everything's on the line for you, and you're favored to win. And quite frankly, I think most people in the Tennessee fan base, Austin, have just assumed a win this week. I mean, it's about, can you host a playoff game? How do tickets work for home playoff games? Hotel reservation somewhere? It's like, you got to go win this one first. And so this, it's a huge game that feels different than some of those Georgia matchups because you're expected to win this one.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, it won't be easy. Now, I do think there's a path to where Tennessee can win this game comfortably, but I think it all requires getting off to a hot start. I do think Vanderbilt not having as much quality depth this time of year could be, you know, I mean, they seem a little banged up and not, you know, not as crisp as they were early in the year. So, but yeah, I mean, you can't assume anything. I mean, like, you know, again, Tennessee, all they had to do in 2016 to go to Atlanta was beat South Carolina and Will Muschamp. And then Vanderbilt, and they couldn't do either. I mean, you know, so, I mean, I don't know. For me, like, I think it's going to be, you know, they got to get out of the gates. Just have to get out of the gates.
Well, and then you go even back further in the Wayback Machine. I mean, you go back to 2001 in the SEC Championship game.
There you go.
You knock out starting quarterback. You knock out starting tailback, and the quarterback runs around on you. And wins a football game. That's Hubber. Hard to beat the same team twice in a year. I get all that.
Hubber, I didn't see Nico walking around Tom Black track with a rose in his mouth. And flowers.
Yeah. They did not do that last week. There was no celebration.
Love you, Casey. Well,
I mean, there was none of that going on while everybody had hotel rooms booked for Pasadena. So again, I mean, I think that this is a huge game. Where does it compare to other previous games? I don't know. This is the biggest one Tennessee's played in a while, because it's all in front of you. It's all on the line. And again, you're expected to win.
If Tennessee gets in, do you hope they get the Friday night game and not one of the Saturday games?
Oh, selfishly for us. Yes. Right.
I'm a day game guy because of cold weather. I'm selfish. I think a night game would be bananas. But I think whenever you play, you could play at 8 a.m. on Sunday morning. If it's a playoff game in Neyland Stadium, then everybody's going to be bananas for that.
I think Friday night being that first game, I mean, there's going to be so many eyeballs on that first game. Well, not that there won't be on Saturday, because none of them are overlapping, but like, still, I just think that Friday night game's got a little something to it.
You know, we were kind of talking about it over at the facility the other day. Like, say Georgia is not the SEC winner, like whatever game Georgia's in, you could see that being a night game on Saturday, maybe that third game. But like Oregon would be the champion there. It would make a whole lot of sense for Tennessee's game to be a night game, but for like Indiana game to be a day game, for obviously Boise State to be a day game. I don't know. It'll be intriguing to see kind of that first round, which teams market the time slots. Because I think on paper, some teams make a whole lot of sense to where it's either Friday night or Saturday night. Then
again, as Hub said, you got to go beat Vanderbilt. We're doing exactly what the fans have been doing.
That's right. You do.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Just go win. Just go win and let the chips fall where they may. Go win and then root hard for Southern Cal.
Mac Brown not coming back is good news for Isaiah Campbell, right? I mean, it can't be.
Sure.
I
mean, you know, like I said on the Generous Quarters a couple days ago, like I expect, and by this point I'll have expected, you know, the Campbells to have called the school of their choice. Well, they're not calling a school that doesn't have a coach. So, I mean, like, you know, the common sense says that this is going to be Tennessee. you know, and then, you know, this, you know, announce it, you know, on signing day the 4th.
Knowing that things change by the minute, Austin, and we're recording this ahead of time, to the best of your abilities, just kind of, you know, progress report on where David Sanders is.
Can't wait for this kid to be official one way or the other.
I mean, AP, isn't it right now? What does he do this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, like,
if he shows up in Columbus, Ohio,
then Tennessee's in trouble. And if he doesn't, then I would tell you Tennessee's feeling much better about their chances. Not to say he can't just stay home and go to Ohio State, but I think, you know, if he's flipping to Ohio State, he's probably going back for the big game, right? The big game, the big matchup, the best rivalry in sports, or whatever they call it. You know, I just we'll see what he elects to do. I've said for the last several days, I feel like that Tennessee definitely has a real opportunity to hold on to David Sanders. Nothing to this point, as we said here on Wednesday at 10:36 a.m., makes me believe anything otherwise. So, you know, all eyes will be on, does he show up in Columbus? If he doesn't, then I feel like Tennessee's got a fairly strong shot to hold on to him.
Any surprises for next Wednesday on signing day?
I mean, I don't know what's a surprise. I mean, you know, like Darion Smith flipping to Auburn, that's not going to surprise anybody. Onus, I mean, maybe that one would be a fraction. As far as Tennessee, like if Perlotti picked Tennessee, I mean, people know Tennessee's been in on him. Like, a guy coming out of left field and picking the Vols and signing with Tennessee, that's not happened in, I don't know. I don't remember the last year that Tennessee had some type of surprise addition. So, no, I don't think it'll be a surprise. I think it'll be, you know, they might add somebody that we've been talking about, but nothing like, oh, wow, where'd that come from?
You mean there's not a Ulysses Alexander in this class, AP?
Bro, where's he at? That's what we need to do. We need to do a where are they now.
I don't know. That's a surprise that didn't go anywhere. And then Robert Meacham was a surprise everybody refers to when they talk about surprises every year.
Yeah.
Yeah, plenty more questions.
Again, when did Meacham show up? When did Meacham show up, Hover? Like 2003?
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a minute.
Eric, how old were you then?
2003. I mean, I remember watching Robert Meacham. He was a stud, and then he had a great professional career too.
You're like 10?
Yeah, 10.
Yeah, so
nine, exactly. 10 years old. Yep.
He was in grade school.
All right, we got plenty more questions to get into, but first let's get a word from our friends, our presenting sponsors. That is Exterior Home Solutions.
Get Neyland loud this football season with Exterior Home Solutions, East Tennessee's first choice for exterior renovations.
Again, for 25 years, been the number one source for roofing, siding, garage, windows, all that and more. That is Exterior Home Solutions since 1999. 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com.
Hey, this is Travis Thompson, one of the new owners at North Lake Boat Store in La Follette, Tennessee. Love to have you come up and check out our Christmas sale. We have 50% off on all of our stuff in the pro shop. We carry Ranger, StarCraft. You can find us online at northlakeboatstore.com or on Facebook at North Lake Boat Store. Happy holidays.
Okay, let's get back into the questions here. I got a couple from Bear Vol. First one, can you give us a breakdown of the Vols' portal strategies? Which positions and how many at each of those positions? And again, knowing these change, who leaves from Tennessee makes Tennessee maybe want to go and get that position. But what are the targets going to be for Tennessee in December when this window opens?
I mean, yeah, I said it earlier, offensive line, defensive line, receiver, and then we'll see about other spots. You know, do they need to go get a running back if Dylan Sampson turns pro and somebody leaves? Do they need to go get a linebacker, you know, if one of the players leave? You know, do they need to go get a safety? I would tell you safety is probably a spot that I would look for. But, you know, again, I think a lot of it depends on, you know, who leaves, who doesn't leave. And then I think the three safest positions to say Tennessee will turn to the portal are receiver and the both lines of scrimmage.
Yeah, and I think you could probably make a case that's going to be the fact every year. Okay, I mean, I don't think you're ever going to turn down a rush end or a defensive lineman who you think can help you. I mean, did you really need Jackson Moy from a number standpoint? Probably not, right? But it made sense to take him. I think you're always going to be looking at a mature, you know, guy who's college ready, you know, because he's been in college at that position. Same for the offensive line. And I think coaches always are looking for a skill guy out there. The beautiful thing about where Tennessee is right now you're cherry picking, right? You're plugging a
maybe
I need a little more depth here. Maybe, I mean, it's not like it was 3 years ago where you say, well, what do you need? Well, I need seven of these and five of these and three of these. I mean, you're just in a much better place with the depth of your roster because of what you've done from a recruiting standpoint and kids willing to stay. Now we'll see how many are willing to stay this offseason.
It's kind of like when we had a spot to fill, like we were cherry picking. We're like, oh, Matt Ray, let's go get that guy. Stud.
He is a stud. He's the man.
Only one, him and Grant, the only one that works, right?
That's exactly right.
Will Gaston Moore use his final year of eligibility?
I don't know what Gaston Moore is going to do. Can Gaston Moore come back?
He can. He's got 1 year.
I mean, why would you not? Unless he's played enough this year, Austin, that he says, you know what? I want to play somewhere for a season, and I'm going to go transfer down and play somewhere. Otherwise, I mean, why would he not come back and do another year? But, I mean, he may be tired of college life. He may be ready to go. I mean, I don't know. He may be thinking about getting ready to get married, or he may have a job waiting on him. I don't know exactly where Gaston Moore is and at this point in his life and what he wants the next year to look like. Does he want to be a college kid for another year, or is he ready to go be an adult?
I mean, this is season five for him, so he's already been here for a victory lap. He technically has one more year left. So, yeah, I mean, that's a long time to be in college, long time.
Now, here's the thing. Do you want to coach? Does he want to be a coach? Then maybe hanging around another year makes some sense, right, Austin? I mean, I just don't know what his plan. I don't know what his future goals are.
Yeah, good old tailpipe, baby. You just never know what he's going to do.
What can we expect the running back room to look like in 2025? 1.5 current running backs to enter the portal. Are you taking the over or the under? I'd say the under, right?
I would take the under on 1.5. Yeah. Let's see here. You know, I don't know. I mean, outside of that, I mean, like, what happens with Dylan Sampson?
That's not a guarantee that he's going, but it's not a guarantee that he's back, right?
Correct, yes.
So I mean, it all starts with him. And then from you know, if he stays, Brent, maybe somebody wants to go. I don't know. We just don't know.
I don't think, Hubbard, that like, okay, let's say Dylan Sampson goes pro. I don't think Tennessee's like going out there and going, okay, we got to go get a plug and play guy. Cause like then that stunts Peyton Lewis and Deshaun Bishop and the guys you have on your roster. Like, and they like those guys.
Yeah. And I don't think anybody in the room is making a decision on Dylan Sampson's decision because Dylan doesn't have to make the decision before the portal gets kicked off. And if you're going in the portal, you don't want to go at the end of the portal cycle. You got to get your name out there early, correct, you know, to get recruited. So, you know, I think it just depends on where a guy like, you know, where's Cam Seldon at this point? I mean, you know, is he content? Is he happy? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know everybody likes these questions and everything. There's just so many variables out there that you don't, and I'm not trying to be mean or pick on anybody. I get the question. I don't know what's in the mind of these guys. You know what I mean? I mean, there's a lot of people assuming like, okay, Mike Matthews. Well, I don't know if Mike Matthews, how happy or unhappy Mike Matthews is right now. I mean, that's, nobody knows. It's all speculation based on number of snaps played. And for some, that's not the end-all, be-all, everything, right? I mean, some guys are more patient than other guys are. And a lot of guys aren't patient. They were taking off running somewhere. So just have to step back and wait and see. Again, we've had a lot of transfer stories written the last few years that never saw the light of day. Mm-hmm. Guys that were leaving that never saw the light of day.
Well, it's kind of like the freak out about David Sanders. And it's like, guys, have you ever seen the movie Men in Black? And in Men in Black, they talk about like the world's always close to being annihilated. And, you know, people never know it. People never know what's walking amongst them. They never know about what's about to happen. That's a lot of ways this movement in the transfer portal. Yeah, some stuff gets out. There's a lot of stuff that you never hear about. And you don't need to know about because all it would tell you to do is panic because most of it doesn't happen.
Yep, that is true. Uncle Austin, 50 cents. Austin Kaner, was West High School hosed on that TD at the end? Replay looked close. There's no way this week's game can top the last 2 weeks, can it? No chance. I mean, I hope a great game for tomorrow, but these last 2 weeks, the endings were fantastic.
I didn't think that Sevier County West could top Sevier County Powell, and yet it did. So I'm not going to definitively say that it won't top with Sevier County Oak Ridge. You know, we didn't have a down-the-line view. I thought in real time he was short. I thought the one angle in the replay, the ball might have somehow got across, but there was no way to truly tell. And for the naked eye of an official, that is such a tough call. That's rough for everybody involved. But, hey, if the quarterback puts it on the receiver instead of kind of, you know, short-arming it, then it, you know, it's a touchdown.
Well, it's funny. Like, I mean, both endings were fantastic, so I'm not taking anything away from the West Sevier County game, but I would still go in terms of better game or better viewing the Sevier County comeback. Just what they did in the last two or three minutes was incredible, because they needed this to happen, and they got this to happen. Onside kick, got this to happen. I mean, it was wild, man. It's been a whole lot of fun. Hopefully, Oak Ridge, Sevier County will even outdo those, but I don't know if that's going to happen. GoVols 182, the Prince of Bradley County says we are still getting Davis Sanders, and we'll have a massive haul of portal in the offensive line. Do you think both are true? Yeah, we've already kind of talked about the offensive line. That's going to be one of the focal points in the transfer portal. Saudi Daisy Vol wants to know about Carson Gentle's brother, the center from Harvard. He's been a popular name on the GQ this week. Would Tennessee entertain a center in the portal?
I don't think so. And so, I mean, you know, I just don't see him going that route.
Yeah, I would agree. I think back to his the other poster's question is, how big of a haul are you looking at in the portal? I think it's going to be fascinating. How many does Tennessee feel like they need to get in the portal versus, hey, we feel like this young guy is ready and can step in and be elevated to be the starter there? I think that's going to be something to watch, because it's going to tell you what they think about some of these young guys, depending on the number of guys that they take in the portal here in the month of December. I think that's an interesting storyline for where this team is offensively moving forward.
Yeah, and I think that question can also come from, like, you know, Pete Nakos putting out a story saying that, you know, schools XYZ and all the above, you know, are expected to be big spenders, you know.
Well, I mean, I think Tennessee's one of the best NIL deals. They've had one of the best NIL packages out there and programs out there of anybody. So
yeah,
I think Tennessee makes that list every year.
Yeah.
Because of what Tennessee's done in the NIL world since NIL came into fruition. I think
here's an interesting one, and I'm intrigued to see what both of you guys would say about this. To your knowledge, what is the worst, most unethical usage of newfound NIL freedom that a team or individual has taken advantage of?
I mean, at this point, AP, what's unethical with no guardrails? I mean, what is a bad thing? I mean, giving somebody a vehicle, housing, money. I mean, like what do we deem as like wrong in the NIL world right now? Because there are no rules in the NIL world right now, right?
In most states, or in some states, kids can make money before they even sign. I mean, yeah, like
I don't know that I have any examples or any knowledge of anything, because you say, well, I mean, can you believe they did that? Well, it's within the rules. Why would you not do that?
I mean, it'd be like, you know, I mean, it'd be like if there were no laws in this country and you could just murder people. And I mean, like, it would be not unethical because you can. I mean, like,
this is weird.
I'm just saying there's no laws. Hubs is right. There are no laws in NIL, like no, like hard and fast laws on, like, you know, like what you can do, what you can't do. I mean, kids can literally negotiate and then go through bowl practice and go, you know what? I feel like I'm going to be a player next year. I'm going to need more money, or I'm going somewhere else. And you can't really stop them. Like, that's the problem. Like, if a kid signs a contract with somebody, like, they're not held to the contract. They're renegotiating throughout the deal. Like, it's not like if somebody signs a three-year deal, they're renegotiating after the first 6 months.
Well, and that's the problem with the second portal window and why so many people want the second portal window gone. I see the standpoint of you want a guy to compete, go through spring practice. If he doesn't win a job, he should have the opportunity to go. I understand that part of it. But at the same time, too, you go through spring practice and you determine to yourself, hey, I'm the man, or hey, I didn't get everything that it wasn't exactly how they told me it was going to be. I appreciate the 4 months that I was here, the 3 months that I was here, but I'm gone. And you can do that. Those are the things that are problematic. That's not unethical. That's just the rules. You're allowed to do whatever you want to do.
Tyler Barron was certainly within the rules to go to Ole Miss, get an apartment, never really enroll, then go to Louisville, go through spring practice, then go, you know what, I'm not going to stay here, and then go to Miami. Like, he was certainly within the rules to do that, because, again, there are no rules. That's the problem. And I know the what I was trying to describe was probably not the exact way to go about it, but, I mean, the point is, like, you know, when there are no guardrails, there are no rules, it's a free-for-all. And then it's just a headache, and it just – that's where, like, you – I mean, like, I get, like, people still love the on-the-field product. last Saturday was awesome. Every Saturday's been awesome. But like for fans, it's hard to kind of be like, man, I really love watching this kid play because he could bolt. There's nothing stopping any of these kids on Tennessee's team from being out of here, no matter how much they love Tennessee, because some school offered a lot more.
Chicago Vol, how do tickets work for teams with home field advantage in the first round of the playoffs? Is it a 50-50 split, or does a home team get significant majority of tickets like a usual home game?
That's what I would say.
Yeah, it's more like a home game. I mean, it's not a 50-50 split. If you're going to do 50-50 splits, you're going to play in neutral sites.
Yeah.
There's an advantage for having a home game, and 50-50 split is not the advantage that you're looking for. So it's going to be much more like a regular season home game.
ZJS Vols, what is a good comparison for DeJuan Morris? Good out of high school comparison.
Who's the running back for the Chiefs? Isaiah Pacheco?
Yeah.
Something like that. A guy that can go out and slot, catch a slant, take it to the house, hand it to him out of the backfield. I mean, that's kind of how I envision him. I mean, he's a thrill a minute. If you have a chance to watch him this week against Maryville on the NFHS, do it.
S. Pitt Vol wants to know, he said, this question is working with the assumption that Tennessee beats Vanderbilt. Complete the following. Tennessee makes a run in the college football playoff if blank.
They get a home game.
Hub, it's all about that vertical passing game, right? That they got to have some consistency in the passing game.
Yeah, but I think home game. I mean, I agree with Austin. I think a home game is a big deal, given where Tennessee's at, given the crowd, given how Tennessee's played at home under Josh Heupel versus the road. I mean, I don't disagree with Austin. Now, on the field, once you kick it off, yeah, there's things like the vertical passing game, but you're also, at that point, you're going to be 12 games into your season. I mean, you're going to kind of be who you are.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to have to be able to line up and run it, but – you know, you can't make a run if you don't get in. So first thing you got to do is get in Saturday.
Yeah, I guess like when I thought of run, I thought like winning two games and going onto the ship. But yeah, no doubt. I mean, if you play at home, Tennessee's lost one game at home.
Did you just drop the ship?
Again, ship, Eric, because he's only 30 or 31, he thinks he can still use the young kids lingo. And it's
okay. Ship. Championship. That's
we're
even
going
better.
To the ship.
I hadn't said bet or drip or anything like that, right? All right, Volume Shooter, he certainly lives up to his name because he always puts about 17 paragraphs. I'm going to take two of them. We can work through quickly here. Here's a football one. Does Brazel, and here's a good question going back to kind of what we talked about with the transfer portal, and you guys both said receiver. Does Brazel and Thornton's lack of success change the way Coach Josh Heupel's staff thinks about and evaluates transfer wide receivers? Brew hasn't been a world beater, but I would definitely call his transfer a success. Does the deficiency wide receiver come down to needing to recruit or develop high schoolers better at the receiver position or other positions? Like, did those two guys kind of both have had moments, but both haven't been what we thought they would be whenever they came over in the portal. Does that cause them to reevaluate?
Well, I think a couple things. One, I mean, I think they played Dante Thornton out of position for much of the season last year. He also dealt with injury. He's been dealing with injury this year. I think he's an outside vertical guy. I think that's what he was at Oregon. I think that's what he is here. I think that's what he is. So I think that they didn't help Thornton with trying to make him a slot receiver. Brazel, I'm shocked. I mean, I'm surprised. I thought that he would absolutely have a huge impact on this team the way that he's run around. Why is that the case? Is that all – you know, is this system, does it take a full year in this system for guys to know what to do, you know, and that type of thing? I don't know. Was he a bad fit? Does he love ball? There's lots of things there. I mean, the challenge with the portal for me, guys, is that it's the evaluation process. What can you learn in a short period of time? I mean, think about this. Jermod McCoy was on campus a hot minute, right, AP, about 6 hours, and decided to come to Tennessee. And he's been a perfect fit because he loves ball. Now, is that a great eval? I mean, or is that, hey, this guy can play. Let's see if we can get him. And he turns out to be exactly what you want. You got some good fortune there. I do think there's a little bit of that in the portal because you have such a short window of time to evaluate a guy because things are going so fast. So I don't know. Does it change how you evaluate receivers? I mean, maybe. You know, but I mean, you got to get some guys who can come in and be explosive for you, whether that's the portal or your high school kids. If it's going to be high school kids, you're going to have to play some of those guys earlier. So we'll see what happens with the receiver position moving ahead, Austin.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I caught up with McCoy at the airport. He literally came into town, had a cup of coffee, and was out. Like, it was only literally a couple hours.
And then went to Texas A&M, which is in his home state. And I think most people thought, no way that kid's making it back here. But saw enough in 6 hours to not want to go to A&M and come here.
Another question here from Volume Shooter. Around the time Danny White hired Kim Caldwell, I believe one of you guys mentioned that he was also taking steps to shore up the NIL funds and earmark for Lady Vols. While I know money has always been something to do with it, how much does NIL play into this terror the last couple of weeks the Lady Vols staff is on right now in terms of recruiting?
What do you think? Like, I mean, you know, they're not going on a run with the high-caliber players that they've added without, you know, a good NIL package for some of those players.
Yeah, particularly the fact that nobody, when some of these were committing, they hadn't even played a game yet. Nobody had seen her system and see how it translated. So, yeah. I mean, NIL is definitely a factor. Not saying they can't recruit.
I am really intrigued to watch them when they get into some of these tougher games. Because right now, I took my daughter's middle school basketball team to the game on Tuesday, and I mean, they just bludgeon poor old Western Carolina. But when they get to these tougher games, what do they look like? What does that system look like?
And that starts next week with Florida State. What does that look like with Florida State at home? I think that's going to be a good test and going to be fun to watch and see what happens. They're entertaining to watch, and the style that they play, they're more than just shooting a three, and we'll see if they can continue to wear people down. I mean, they certainly have been off to a quick start here against some inferior opponents, but it's going to ratchet it up when you talk about Florida State and Iowa coming up on the schedule here in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, a couple more. Volunteered 87. Do you believe the talking heads of the committee when they say they don't put any emphasis on avoiding rematches/conference matchups? 100 out of 100 people don't want to see Tennessee and Georgia, Indiana, Ohio State, blah, blah, blah. We can answer that question, but we'll put it out. I mean, it's been all over the board. I mean, there's no way Tennessee's traveling to Athens. That is not going to be a first-round game.
It's easy to just seed them the way you had them seeded, knowing like, okay, Georgia's going to play for the SEC. They're either going to win and get the bye, or they're going to lose, and we'll adjust at that time. Like, I'm with you guys. Like, these rematches more than likely are not going to happen. I think Tennessee's most likely scenario is they're, you know, either hosting someone like Texas who falls because they lost to Georgia in the championship game, or they are, you know, going to a South Bend, a Happy Valley, or the Shoe.
Well, I think the other thing too is, why would you come out and say you are going to avoid those? Because then you're questioning the integrity of your seeding. Well, we've moved somebody up to a higher seed, but maybe they get to a playoff game at home because we want to avoid a rematch deal, right? I mean, there's no benefit to coming out and saying, yeah, guys, we're going to absolutely do all we can to make sure that there's no rematches in games. Because some people then will say, well, you're playing favorites, you know, or this guy gets favoritism here, they get favoritism. It makes no sense to come out and publicly state that. I'll be shocked if there's a bunch of rematches in this playoff system to start. Now, as teams win, that's always a possibility, but I don't think they'll match people up in the opening round in rematch games. But they're never going to say, well, we wanted to avoid that, because then it questions their seeding.
Well, kind of on this, I mean, there's a poster, and he's been active this week asking the same question. I think it's Loyal Vol something. I forgot the rest of it. And, I mean, it's a decent question, just saying, well, I can't wrap my head around why they will put these rankings out knowing that that's not going to be the finished product, like knowing that Tennessee's not going to go to Georgia and all that.
Because you watched.
Exactly. The number one, it's a made-for-TV thing. Number two, it is a if the playoffs started today.
Sure.
And number three, again, it's – you're going to tune in next Tuesday and watch it again, right? I mean, that's what it's all about.
Well, that way, if you just did one at the very end, then people would really, question, what's going on.
How did this get here? This at least gives you a path knowing, okay, my team is Tennessee. They got to do this, at least it kind of gives you an understanding.
And it holds the committee accountable because, you see where they are each week and what happened on the field. Now, I think some of their decisions are trash. No,
I agree with that.
And Ward Manuel – I mean, with some of the worst justifications it's Clemson, man. They beat the Citadel. I mean,
his committee members cannot get rid of him quick enough, man, or just get him away from the mic. He does them no favors every Tuesday night. It's like, dude, shut up. I mean, it's so bad. Like, does he not have, surely to goodness he is a PR guy saying, hey, you're going to be asked this. You're going to be asked this. Be ready.
We know nobody knows anything going on before it ever gets revealed, right? I mean,
the B roll just happens to roll right there, right?
I mean, so you know, it again, it's made for TV, and it's great for the game, right? I mean, it's a midweek talking point. Games are Saturday. What is everybody talking about? Tuesday night, Wednesday morning at the water cooler, Thursday. They're talking college football in late November. That's exactly what college football wants to happen. It's perfect. It's a great setup for them that they've created.
Yep. All right. Last one we're going to end on here. This is from Pine, a two-parter. Has Nico ever played in a game near freezing conditions? Does nasty weather favor the Vols or Vandy? It might seem silly, but then you're like, well, he is from Southern California and he's probably never played in these conditions. How would you answer that question, Austin?
I mean, I just don't think it matters. Like, I just don't. I mean, Hubs brought it up. I mean, it's a little bit tongue in cheek. I mean, he played 7-on-7 in snow and sleet and snow at Farragut a few years ago. So it's not like, you know, and he didn't bat an eye out there. It wasn't like he was out there like, he was just, you know, throwing the rock around. So,
but he did have on the pajama bottoms,
which I mean, again, made it even, to me, makes him look even more tough because I mean, those things were paper thin. So, and I was out there like dying, thinking this is the low point of my career. Not quite where Hubs was when he interviewed that kid over in North Carolina that time. But still,
shut up. That's your fault. That one was all your fault. But that's a topic for another podcast. By the way,
the board loves when Hubs just tells AP, just shut up and move on.
We're not having that conversation today.
Were you raised in a middle-class family?
Shut up. All right. How many UT fans will be at the stadium on Saturday? 25%, 50%, or 75%?
70.
It only holds like 28,000, I believe, right now.
I think Tennessee fans are going to do everything they can to get a hold of any available ticket out there. The question is going to be how many Vandy fans are willing to sell the ticket. There's not going to be Vandy students there because it's Thanksgiving break. I think Tennessee is going to do everything they can to take over that stadium. Now, the question is how willing are Vanderbilt fans to sell their ticket?
That's true. Probably not, right?
We'll see.
One would assume.
I mean, the problem is the cold. If it weren't cold, I would tell you that they're probably not. But, I mean, how many of them are willing to go out there and set in 35? I mean, when they kick that thing off, what's it going to be, 29? I mean, like, you don't get to the high point of the day till like 4 o'clock.
Hubs is already having nightmares about that window being open.
Hey, you know what? Do you want me to get with my dad? He's got one of those heated vests where you push the little button. It's like
buddy,
Iron Man.
Buddy, I've had a long sleeve heated undershirt, thermal shirt for 5 years. So I'm ahead of the curve. I've got heaters.
Hubs and technology, baby.
I've got heaters from my pockets and my pants, from my hands.
Hubs claiming he's ahead of the curve with technology is next level.
I mean, I've got more gear than, I mean, I will look like the State Puff Marshmallow Man from Ghostbusters. I may not be able to spot because I can't move my arms down to the board because I'm going to have so much gear on.
That was the best part. I'm like, I think I'm going to get field credentials and be down the field for this game. And then I looked at it and I said, nah, I'm just being in the press box.
No chance.
Matt, all right. Like, down there and shoot video in the 30 degrees.
Yeah, it will not be 30 degrees in 2 years when we go back to Georgia, which you're definitely going to do it then. All right, appreciate you guys for tuning in here on this Thanksgiving Day holiday. Hope you guys had a very, very happy Thanksgiving with family, friends, and everybody all involved. Big thank you to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of the show, 865-524-5888, or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been local. They've been trusted since 1999 for roofing, siding, and windows. Contact Exterior Home Solutions today. Big week coming up. We'll continue on. Of course, we got the podcast here today. We'll have the matchup piece coming up later. We'll have picks. We'll have 10 things I think. We'll have Game Quest. Everything to get you set for Tennessee and Vanderbilt. It's right here at VolQuest.com.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.